Hey, this is Josiah Bibb from Solunar, and this is my chapter of As the Story Grows.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Dominate.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Man being realistic.
As the story grows.
I always wanted to be part of a small rebellion.
You got this, Travis. Make them wait for it. Boom.
Moved back down to Orlando for work.
That's right. Yeah.
What are you doing in Orlando?
So I work for a company who primarily works with at corporate events when they come and do their conferences and all that. And I work as an audio engineer.
Oh, fun
for them. So it's good regular work.
Yeah. Back in good old Florida.
Yeah. But it's cool. I'm gonna have the opportunity to travel a decent amount, but not constantly.
Yeah.
So So I'm looking forward to exploring whatever cities I end up in, and so it's a good opportunity for right now. I'm gonna miss Colorado, certainly for the time being. But this is a good opportunity.
You guys having a heat wave down there right now? Because it's like 100 degrees in Philadelphia.
It was like 96 2 hours ago.
Yeah.
And that's without accounting for humidity. So. Yeah.
Florida summer. Good times.
Yeah.
So that's it here. Now let's rewind it. I know you're from a military family, but did you have a home base growing up? Or?
Yeah, sure. New Mexico is, I mean, that's where all the extended family is and everything. We kind of moved around a good bit here and there, but there was a good, 10-year period almost where New Mexico was home. So just by the amount of time spent there and the people I go back to visit, that's always going to be home base.
Cool.
So I at least have that.
Yeah, that's good. So that's 10 years. That's where you spent most of your childhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was like 1st to 10th grade.
Yeah.
So.
It's a good chunk of time.
It is, and a pretty formative chunk of time, I'd say.
Yeah. So did you start playing music while you were in New Mexico? Or?
Yeah, definitely. My older brother, he started playing electric guitar a couple of years before I really got into it. But in elementary school, I started taking piano lessons for a few years and then sort of fell out of that. But then the youth group I was in at the church I was at, they very suddenly needed a bassist.
Mm-hmm.
And I had just started picking it up, like, they put me on the stage as like a beginner, which I guess for any of us that did come up playing in youth group, that's kind of that is the advantage of that, is that you can get in with very little expertise and have an opportunity to grow in front of people and make those kind of mistakes. So bass, yeah. Bass is kind of where I really started of my own interest.
Yeah.
Really, really digging in. And it ended up that, you know, all those piano lessons beforehand actually came back up, and I'm really grateful for them. Now I just kind of fell out of it for a couple of years, but there's that foundation there,
mm-hmm.
at the very least, that I'm grateful for.
Yeah.
So it was bass, and then picked up drums soon after that. Also for church. And then I got a guitar and started messing around with my brother's loop pedal. And that was my only guitar experience. Nice. Was making all these layers on a looper, which means I didn't learn chords or anything. Like if you asked me to play guitar for a church group today, I wouldn't really be able to do what they, not on the spot, probably wouldn't be what they want.
I don't know how to play a G chord, but I can be really technical.
Yeah, but if you give me an hour or so to write this lead,
oh my gosh,
I got you. But so that on top of, you know, learning the fretboard that way and learning sort of how to layer that way, that also pretty heavily played into my compositional style and being able to do it myself.
That's crazy.
So yeah, for me a DAW is just a extreme loop pedal.
Man, that's awesome. I knew you were gonna say you took piano lessons. I just knew you were gonna say it.
Yeah,
because it just feels like,
yeah,
I don't know, there's a proficiency, like we played the same instruments, but the way we play them is not the same. Like, you're really good. And
right, yeah.
Subpar.
I appreciate that. But, like, yeah. Like I said, like, it's really kind of an esoteric sort of process, though. That was a big thing, was in college. I met a group of guys and started playing music with them. And that was the first time I really had to play nice with anybody. Bass and drums were already taken, so I had to learn how to sound decent on a guitar and keys. And the way we wrote was entirely, we would jam for a couple of hours and then decide we liked how something sounded and sort of work on that, but it all came from improvising and,
that's so funny,
pretending I knew what I was doing. it's just, I'm grateful for now, but like it was,
yeah, it's stressful.
It was a challenge, yeah. Certainly, but I'm
yeah,
glad it happened.
That's so funny. So we'll back up. What made you want to play bass and get involved in playing, or just playing music in
bass?
General?
I think that was another, you know, I had the guy who played drums for for that youth group, him and then one of my other friends who started playing guitar, or bought a guitar and an amp, I should say, they were talking about getting together some music, and they needed a bassist, and I think that kind of coincided with around the same time I started finding my own music, my own musical tastes, listening to bands that my brother didn't listen to and my, you know, that sort of thing. I started listening a lot more. I don't want to say analytically, but noticing, okay, what's going on with these low sounding things or these drums or whatever, and Bass seemed like a good starting place to get a guitar, because, you know, you can play one note and it's...
Yeah.
One note's enough. I mean, even... That goes into my guitar playing now. I feel like one note's enough sometimes. At a time, anyway. But, yeah. So, I got a bass and wanted to play with those guys, but that kind of went nowhere. And all of a sudden, the youth group needed a bassist, and I was around.
So, your brother was the one who first introduced you to, like, bands and getting into music?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I think his main thing was always the, you know, the quintessential 80s guitar bands. Joe Satriani is...
Oh, man.
Was always kind of the top tier guy for him. And you know, I get into that to a degree as well. Some of it is, you know, I always want to listen to something that maybe I wouldn't mm-hmm. necessarily seek out myself, but I know somebody else sees value in it. So I can learn something from it. Absolutely. And something like him, for example, I mean, Joe Satriani, that is, he's, it's all instrumental, but he makes it feel like you don't miss the singer with him, which is important.
So what were the first bands that you got into on your own outside of what your brother was into?
One of the first ones I always remember is Showbread.
Showbread?
Yeah. When, specifically the Age of Reptiles okay. album. I know Nihilism, or the first album yeah. was really what kind of struck a chord with a lot of people, but I didn't get into him until Age of Reptiles, and it was the song, oh man, what was it? It's like, Oh, Emetophobia, or
yeah,
something like that.
Yeah.
I saw the music video, and I remember that, like, Because you know that in any of those kind of those genres that are supposed to be a little bit off, mm-hmm. the first time you hear it and it's like, this is wrong and I don't dislike it, what's happening? Mm-hmm. you know, it was one of those I didn't quite it didn't fit in anything I quite understood before. I mean, they were not the first ones to do that sort of thing, but there was just that drive to just make something that was its own thing. Like, I did not recognize it at all, and I wanted to know more.
Yeah. I think, like, what I was going to say before the power went out was Showbread's an interesting band, because I was, like, by the time they came around, I was already, like, way deep into, like, Blood Brothers and At the Drive-In and Refused. And,
right, yeah.
But, like, Me Without You, A Law Dispute, like, all those bands that kind of have a similar thing. And, like, people who are into Showbread were, like, super into Showbread and, like, love them and, like, have logo tattoos and whatnot now.
Right, yeah.
And I was,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, they're cool, but they sound like all these other bands that I already listened to.
I mean, yeah, yeah. I can...
But that's, like, the difference of, like, being 10 years older than, like...
Right, and everybody
right,
comes
something.
To it with their own, like, set of experience, you know, the sort of thing that has already impressed them by that
right.
point in time, you know.
And they seem like a good gateway band into, like, heavier or wilder things, right? Because it was
absolutely, yeah.
They were just crazy enough.
Just yeah.
And that seemed to be the case for you, right? Like they dove
absolutely. I mean, and not even like not even just. I mean, certainly into like heavier stuff, even into. Because I mean, I had to come around to screamed vocals. It wasn't that hard to get there, right. But a point had to be made,
right?
And it's like, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And then even like you're saying, like their logo and everything. That was, I think, that was another thing. Maybe not necessarily that they had it going, but like people like that idea of like a strong visual associated. Yeah. I think the logo is awesome. Just for the fact that it's you know, like in graphic design, like a good silhouette logo is really impactful on top of whatever your the shape is, but
yeah.
And again, for it was one of those, it's the eighth note crossed out thing. It's one of those where it's like, more than anything, you just start asking questions when you see it. It's like, what do you mean? Do you mean no music? What is your...
No eighth notes ever.
Yeah.
Four on the floor. End of story.
Right. Yeah.
So you discovered that song and that video and that band via YouTube, right? That's what you're saying? That was where you first saw it?
It wasn't even YouTube.
No,
it was, I think, Tooth and Nail. I'm trying to remember even how I came across it, but like Tooth and Nail did like a couple. This was the time before YouTube was around, but it obviously was not what it was now. And like there was still that little area in time where record labels still thought that putting out a bunch of videos on a DVD was a good idea.
Okay, so you know? This was one of the DVDs you saw.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So I saw it on one of those.
No, I know. I have, like, well, I used to. I don't think I have any more, but, like, the old Tooth and Nail VHS tapes of music videos.
Right, yeah. Which were cool, and what I used it for was that, like, I watched, at least the first time through, I watched all of them on there just to, like, buffet style, okay, so I'm just going to subject my ears to whatever comes out, and if I gravitate to something, I gravitate to something.
Was there something that made you get that DVD? Was there a band already on there that you liked that made you get it, or just
I think
somebody else
there
had
were
it,
there were a one of my friends had already introduced me to a couple of Tooth and Nail bands that I'd already really gotten to enjoy. Probably the biggest being Amberlin. I think I probably was into Emery somewhat by that point too, but yeah, and there were some names I recognized. That it was just one of those, I was getting enough things from one place that I enjoyed that I was like, okay, well, I'll give this a shot, and something good came out of it. So
that's the same story for so many people. That's my story. It's like you like one band, and then you like find another band on the label you like, and you're like, all right, I trust everything this label puts out, and I'm gonna get everything.
Right have. Yeah, you
and that's how you should. If it had the label logo on it, you were gonna buy it,
right? Well, yeah, what is the network of music that they are connected to?
Right,
I want to know more about it.
Right, and then you like read the liner note, or at least I used to read the liner notes and be like, what bands does this band thank?
Yeah.
And if I don't already own those bands' albums, I'm going to go find them.
Yeah, absolutely. Whether they have like other projects or even, I know a lot of names of mixers and producers now that.
Right.
Like if I know they're going to be working on something, I can think, well, at least on that level, I know I can trust the quality of it. I can trust
the
that
recording.
It's the recording
or whatever.
The presentation of the material is going to be it's going to be good whether or not the material itself is what I'm after.
Yeah. So that sent you down the road to like musical obsession? Because I'm always curious for like around that time, YouTube wasn't quite what it is now. Mm-hmm. And streaming music's, I guess streaming music still wasn't as big as it is.
Because this would have been,
right?
This would have been 2008-ish.
Yeah, like 10 years ago.
Which is, that's absurd.
It is absurd.
I can't have 10 years behind me. That's anyway.
Time flies, man.
I don't know. Shoot. Anyway. But so it, like it was, I think it was at least, YouTube that is, was at least like becoming a healthy sort of point on the internet, but like not like the watering hole it is now, so to speak. You know, it's like one of the five destinations on the internet at this point.
Right. I'm just, you know? I'm just curious because I'm trying to think of like from there, maybe not that moment specifically, but you got into like music and collecting, and I know you got like CDs and started to dabble in vinyl, and like,
yeah,
you went down that role of like music obsession with,
yeah,
which so many of us go down, and it's awesome and terrible at the same time.
There's a shelf of 500 plus CDs over there,
right?
It's
not that many.
Yeah, you know, no, it's not. That's, and like, I'm even thinking like, I think CDs is a good way to keep going because it doesn't, I can do it pretty cheap, first of all.
You can now, yeah.
Yeah. So, and it's not going to require the amount of space that vinyl would.
Not if you, yeah, if you don't keep the jewel cases, yeah.
Right.
Especially if you don't keep the jewel cases.
See, that's the thing is, if I wasn't keeping the jewel cases, I wouldn't even be into.
No.
I like keeping all the artwork and everything.
Well, I keep the like cover art, like the inserts.
Oh, okay. You just,
but all the jewel cases, that case itself,
all the plastic goes away. I see.
Yeah, because I had to, because I have vinyl and cassettes, and it's the whole thing.
Right. Yeah. I guess I get to, at this point, I'm still. I like the I still like the displayability of that in terms of actually being able to see spines. Well,
you're not
and that
married
sort
and you
thing.
Don't have kids, so just wait.
Yeah. Exactly.
Although you've had to move
today,
all that across country a few times, so.
I have, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding. But, most things have been added to it in, like, the last 4 years. But even still, yeah, there were two cross-country moves in that time, so.
So what got you into that? What made you start going into collecting and getting into CDs or vinyl or whatever? And
I think just
wanting more of it? Because iTunes was around at this point.
It was, It, you know, in a way, I always kind of, at least my favorite kind of experience with music is very similar to how, to like pairing soundtrack to a movie,
mm-hmm.
where even if you, like, if you can be familiar with the movie and listen to the soundtrack and still, it's a different way of listening to it, but like, there's a space that's created for you.
Sure.
Head to just wander through, and I think at the end of the day, that's kind of a big thing, that actually having like this physical artifact can kind of help with. Is there's artwork, there's almost resources to sort of help build that world, so to speak, that the music lives in.
Right. There's, you know, a connection. There's something you touch, and this
so,
act of picking
I mean, that,
it on. And
that fact alone was probably like the first most interesting thing, being able to like flip through like a really nicely made, you know, booklet.
Yeah.
That's actually meant to be like artistically paired with the music in some way. And, but then on top of that, it's at this point, there's so much music, obviously, and there's so much I have access to. So this is kind of, this is one of many ways of kind of at least paring down into like chunks of music to think about.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's what matters most. It's what you can
touch
and feel, as opposed to just everything that's on iTunes or on Bandcamp
that right.
will yeah. take you years to listen to.
Because, yeah, I mean, it's... I mean, you want to listen to a lot of diverse things, and mm-hmm. you know, you kind of swing back and forth between I'm going to listen, I just want to hear something new, and then going back to all your old favorites. I still like, as any music listener does, you still like to be able to really sink your teeth into one thing that's really grabbing your attention mm-hmm. over.
Yeah.
And like, you know, you listen to it maybe, well, you know, maybe it's like a couple times a week or something for yeah. like a month or so. And that's having that physical thing around, I think, helps facilitate that and kind of lets you get a better understanding of a particular piece than, I don't know. I like to being able to focus on something.
Sure, sure, sure. No, it's I'm just curious.
There's like two, yeah.
Yeah.
Spotify has like too many exit routes in terms of where my attention can go. You know?
Right. It's like great when you're like, in the shower doing chores, and you can just shuffle like stuff you know you're gonna like that's in the background, but like
yeah,
not for like focused listening.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, I remember like when Napster first came around, like downloading a record on Napster, and then on the release date going to the store and picking it up and like putting it in my car and being like, meh, unimpressed because I'd already heard the record and I was like, oh, Napster sucks. Like ruining the music experience, being like, I don't care to listen to this record anymore because I've listened to it 100 times already and it's not special anymore.
yeah, exactly.
And that is why. Yeah.
And I know this was a bigger problem, I think, during the Napster days, but like, I'm at the point, like, I'm not like overly hung up on audiophile quality stuff, okay. but like, you know, CD quality is pretty good. There's like an expectation, at least, that you're going to get a perfectly serviceable, not overly just washed version of the music, you know?
Yeah, I just want my MP3s above 128, because at 128 and below, it's garbage.
So you start going underwater.
Yeah. So you graduated high school, you moved down to Florida to go to Full Sail for audio production, right?
Yes.
And yeah. and that's your first band when you joined it? Tosca?
Tosca.
That was the
first time I had in any like really creative manner collaborated mm-hmm. On music. Obviously, I'd played in worship bands, but like on the level of you have to come up with a part, be able to play it, and stand behind it as something you think is worth being heard.
mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I mean that was a good experience though. Actually, having to take into consideration other people's visions and opinions, and it was good though, because like I still have all my old sessions that I tried making music before that, like mm-hmm. in the similar to the way I do it, you know, it's me and I record everything, but it had nowhere near the level of focus like there's a very clear pre-Tosca post-Tosca divide in the kind of focus I had on what even song structure is, or which yeah. is still pretty loose in how I define it, but
we'll be right back.
I'm curious, as a multi-instrumentalist, how that was playing in a band. Where you only have control over what you're playing.
Yeah. I mean, I still...
On what was not maybe your first or best instrument at the time.
Yeah, no. I think that's why I wanted the keyboard. That's why I wanted the keyboard to be there, too. Just, okay, well, if I can't come up with something good on one of these, I at least have the outlet of jumping to the other one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess on that level, it was, it teaches you to listen in a way you wouldn't necessarily, because when I'm writing stuff by myself, obviously, you know, I kind of start imagining what these other layers are going to be. I audiate, which is the visualized just for hearing. Whereas obviously when you're playing with other musicians, there's a more reactive sort of thinking that needs to happen. Especially with how I would interact with the drummer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was sort of the biggest point for me was, because I think drums are what I can think of, like I can imagine myself playing the easiest.
Yeah.
When I'm hearing something, it's easy to think in terms of drums for me. So there's a part of that had to not so much shut off, but at least take a backseat to where this guy wants, you know, where his instincts want to go, and
yeah.
And not to try and shut down all of those, but to act like follow them and accent them and try and fit it over what I was trying to do. And I guess that's the thing. It makes you listen and be more considerate.
Yeah.
which is just, I guess, to the end listener, that's just an arrangement concept in a way. Is even when I'm tracking things solo, I'm slowly getting a better idea of the fact that these instruments need to be aware of each other.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, but you can keep massaging that, I think, into infinity.
Right.
So yeah, that was a big deal for that, was just every instruments being considerate of other instruments.
The journey from Tosca to Solinar.
So the Tosca story, because I'm still good friends with all three of those guys, and the way that kind of fell out has been a topic of discussion between us for ever since, pretty much.
Ever since, like, you broke up.
Hey, why and how did we screw that up? not screw it up, but it quickly became the least important thing for us. I mean, we started playing in college, and then we all graduated and had to figure that out. So we were actually all living in the same house together for the first little while after graduating, and we played some gigs, and we got really tight with the set list we had at the time, but any work moving forward really started coming to a halt when everyone had to start taking weird jobs, and most of us are in production or entertainment of some variety, so basically none of us worked 9 to 5s. It was nonsense hours.
Nonsense hours.
Yeah.
Semi-creative work already.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of why it fell out, but I just bring that up because that I was still trying to write and just write like raw material to present to them to see how they interpret it and see if we can make it into something.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular, the two tracks from that ended up on the first Solinar EP, Years and Hoarfrost, those were demoed out with Tosca at least partially in mind.
Mm-hmm.
I those were following like a very clear idea I had for each of them. So I just demoed them out the way I normally do. But I had decided during the whole Tosca thing that okay, this is my main project. Like I really have to compartmentalize projects that way, so I can, if I'm going to be giving all my effort to something, I can't be doing these two things at once if I'm not clear on what belongs in one box and what belongs in the other.
Yeah.
So mostly it was the fact that our logistically the band didn't work anymore, but I was still coming up with ideas. So those two tracks kind of sat for several months, and I started kind of seeing the writing on the wall as far as the creative venture of the band. But I don't remember like when I decided to start working on it. On another thing, I just knew, okay, well, if I did, what kind of name would I want? Was I don't want to use my real name. I don't want Josiah Bibb, because like that's more of like a singer-songwriter move, I think.
Right, you want something where you could invite people in.
Right, because it's not,
it got to that point.
Music about me so much. It's just I want to create
these
spaces. So, the way at least part of the way Solinar came around, I wanted something that referenced natural events in some way. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what the short list of that was, but I also wanted something that kind of implied a title of some kind, like a title of a person. There's this guy who goes under the name Cloud Kicker.
Yeah. Who's on the show before?
Oh, he was.
Yeah. There's a Cloud Kicker episode. Yeah.
Well, okay. I'm gonna go check that out.
Yeah.
But basically, for anyone who doesn't know, he all of his stuff comes out on Bandcamp, and he just puts it up for pay what you want. So I mean, he's working this new music landscape just as well as anyone can, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I really liked the idea of, I mean, even though it was one guy, when you're listening to the music, you're not thinking about one guy.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like a pseudonym you can slip into for it.
Like the album Leaf too, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, where it's basically Jimmy, but now it's a whole band. But when it started, it was him. But it was
right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of examples of that.
Obviously. Yeah.
But yeah. So that's how I ended up with that name. But like I just at some point before I had the rest of the music, I decided on the name enough to go ahead and claim like the Facebook page and the Bandcamp page and that sort of thing.
Like, this is the thing, and I own all the web domains of it.
Right. Yeah.
So whatever it is.
I'll deal with that now so that when I go to actually, when I'm actually done, I'm not disappointed.
Right.
But then at some point later that year, I decided on the concept of on doing an EP. I wanted to do something manageable. I didn't want mm-hmm. to just put out singles. I wanted it to be long enough to kind of fit like a story feel into it. That's what inspires me, is that it's that soundtrack model to movies that don't exist. I think I actually had a track list before I had music. that's something I do frequently still, or at least when I'm like working out what the next project is I'll like make scratch track lists and like short descriptions of what this album or EP is, and maybe some like artwork ideas, and there's no music for it yet. I just have kind of an idea. It's cool. It kind of turns it into less into a, like just an open blank canvas to work out what you even want to do, and it kind of turns it into a problem-solving exercise that is still, you know, 95% creativity, but there's borders. So I like the idea of laying out a roadmap, and on that one it was very much basically a roadmap. It was there was like a story structure to it, even though it's just music.
Took you into doing post-rock?
Post-rock? That I almost think that was, I mean, I got into the genre as a listener.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the idea of like these kind of longer form, these longer form compositions a lot of the time, things that have it's a genre that I feel like the production of it can be part of what makes it the genre.
Mm-hmm.
And also just realizing that lyrics don't have to necessarily be a thing. I've never wanted to put down any lyrics that I've never wanted the reason to be because I need lyrics.
Right.
You know, I don't doubt that I'm going to do some at some point, but
mm-hmm.
I'm going to have a good reason for it.
Right.
I think it was especially when I started playing guitar.
Okay.
That's what sort of pushed me in that direction.
Okay.
Because certainly the way I naturally want to go, if I'm like sitting behind a drum kit, isn't necessarily conducive to post-rock drumming. Anyway, I want to play more notes than that usually.
Right.
So, depending on what you point to for a post-rock reference.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we've all agreed that at this point that explosions in the sky is sort of the
standard bearer.
Basically what you're talking about unless you specify otherwise.
Right.
So,
or explosions in the sky or like Caspian.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's both kind of that same
right. thing. Obviously it can be so much broader than that.
Right.
Slint is a thing, for example.
Right.
Spider-Land.
I don't like that record.
It's you said you don't.
I know that's like a like people always point to that record as like post rock is like the forefront, and I'm just like, yeah, I wasn't.
I've listened to it like with purpose. Really listened to it like 4 times,
right?
And I think the last time through, I got to the point where I get it. I really do. It's kind of cool for what it is, but it was kind of more of a research
research project
going back to listen to it, you know.
Yeah,
it's cool, and I'm glad it introduced what it did, but
yeah.
Point being, I mean that doesn't really sound like there are some parallels you can draw to explosions in the sky, but
right, not there's like really. What is so the traditional more, thing that is
yeah.
post rock now right. that we all view it, but then there's like the math rock
yeah, which
side of it, or the post metal side or
also,
whatever that like
right, these are all cousons of the
right, it's all
of the same tree.
It's basically if you play music that builds and
yeah
doesn't have lyrics, you're post
right. Post just means we had rules for rock, and then we wanted to have different rules for rock.
Yeah.
Where was I there? Oh yeah, just how I got into it. Yeah, it was definitely over. It very much stems from how I sort of discovered my way around a guitar.
Okay.
On top of, especially the bass player for the band I was playing with, that was a big genre for him. So that kind of became a good meeting place for us to land in.
Cool.
But I never wanted to come at this project from a genre point of like from a genre. I mean, nobody should write anything that way
right,
necessarily,
right.
But the post rock had blurry enough lines around it to be like, okay, I could kind of say that I'm starting in here and then fill it in with all these other things I'm listening to. And
no, yeah, for sure. Like the Observatory EP, like when I first heard it, like it definitely reminds me of like the first records from like PG Lost or Gifts from Enola, like that sort of vein, like pretty traditional, and then you kind of branch out with the full length into more progressive stuff, and like you can tell like you're a fan of Between the Buried and Me and Rush and like
yeah.
more prog rock infused in there, but it's still in the same vein. And then like with your last single EP Formation, you like completely strip it down, and it's like it all is similar, and you can tell it's all in the same field and genre, and it's not weird for it to all be under your name, right?
Right. Yeah. And that's kind of been an exciting thing to realize, especially with the way the Formation idea came together.
Yeah.
Is that all of, I can make all these things actually sound like they should be neighbors.
Right.
For no other reason than the fact that they all started with me.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to sound the way they're going to sound. I mean, like a Hans Zimmer score sounds like a Hans Zimmer score.
Well, that's because he's cheating these days.
Yeah.
But
like, I like, know what plugins the point is, and he's got his method. He's got his factory method.
Right. I know what drum samples he's using. I know he's got the symphonic orchestra.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I've used that for scoring too on a much smaller level.
No, it wasn't a bad example.
What was it? The third Batman movie? I was like, wait a minute. I know where all these sounds came from. I just used them at work. What the?
I do not like his approach. I really. But I also get it. That's movies are made by through a factory approach at this by and large.
Right. It's fine. I'm picking on him because his is so recognizable. It's like
it is. Yeah.
This digital thing that like is so widely available to everybody. But like a Michael
score the fact sounds that the same, it's a readily available sample.
Right. You're just using, and it's like, yeah, that's the same samples that they're using on Discovery Channel. You're just using them on a movie, right? On a better studio.
Right. Yeah. I think it was a decent example.
But that's fine. Everybody's hired for their sound, and it's not to pick on him, right? Like Jan Tiersen does a score, it's him, John Williams.
Exactly. And they can get into these different types of projects, but it's their DNA.
Like Philip Glass, if Philip Glass does the score, you know exactly what it's going to sound like.
Right.
And it might be different, but you know exactly what you're getting.
In an odd sort of backwards way, that actually has been sort of a liberating thing to realize.
Yeah.
At least looking at my own work is that, okay, well, I can sort of be a little freer about what I want to get into and still understand, what links back to this hypothetical center of my sound.
Right.
They all still are in the same orbit.
Right. Like you play guitar a certain way, and even if you branch out, it still has that vibe and feel. And you can change your delays and reverbs, but it's still going to sound like you played it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy with how the formation thing came together for the end result. You always want the last thing you made to be the best thing you made.
Right.
By whatever measure you pick.
Mm-hmm.
But also it just from a creative standpoint, to be able to take the same idea and twist it different ways, and I guess the next natural step of that progression is now to do songs that take that idea of like splitting the same musical material, like raw written musical material, going different stylistic or production directions with it, and then is the next natural step of that, I think, is just integrating all that into a cohesive whole. So, for example, I'm not going to do this, but if I went back and like tried to do a fourth version of that song that somehow incorporated all three renditions of it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it with that because I'm not inspired to work on that piece anymore. Three times is enough. But just in general, that process of taking it apart, spray painting it a different color, and it still works.
Yeah.
Was a very rewarding.
Yeah.
In terms of what it shows me could potentially be.
So what's next for Solinar? What do you have? You gonna do anything now, or?
It's by no means a dormant it's not a dead project at all.
It's dormant but not dead.
Yeah. Well, there's like a couple other things. I've got life events that I'm. Obviously, I moved, new job, new. Kind of settling some things, but I'm also my brother's had some music he's been sitting on for a long time. I'm kind of helping him
produce it.
Telling him how that how this even works. So helping him produce that, but also one of my old bandmates from Tosca, him and I are reconvening on a project. I'm guessing probably an EP.
Okay, cool.
I think that's unless you're just really heavily inspired with a very clear vision, I think it's good to start any project with an EP, probably.
Right. You know? Yeah. Just put out that 7-inch, that 2-song single.
Right. Yeah. Technically, we did do one track. It's funny. Very soon after I moved back here, I think it was in 2 days, we decided, okay, we need to make a track just to, you know, dust off the cobwebs. And so we did goof off and put together something earlier, or a few months ago. We're not necessarily using the same direction, but it was sort of a practice session.
Yeah.
It was practicing the entire production of a track.
Yeah, again. What you want to do.
And us getting back into the idea of having to cooperate.
That's cool, man.
So, those things are going on, but Solinar is still very... It's not a project I'm ready to give up at all.
Cool.
At the very least, there's at least another kind of experimental idea I'm playing with that I might be able to have out this year or early next year. Another short thing, but at the very least, there's one more full length in this project.
Okay.
I think that I'm not finished on by the time Collisions ends, the last full length. I'm not finished.
You're not finished.
I think.
Okay.
With the whole musical statement or string of ideas that started with the observatory.
Cool.
So, very slowly. I'm in the very, very early parts of that. I've got tons of like tiny pieces of things that might turn into songs.
Yeah.
I've got possible names for tracks. It largely starts with that. It's just like a cloud of notes.
Yeah.
For what these things might be about, what kind of song structures I want to play with, even just the type of like visual art that I think is interesting. And because I'm very influenced by visual art.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's the whole package.
It's in fact, a lot of the time, like I said, I'll start with a track list. And a lot of times I'll even have artwork, or at least artwork ideas, way before there's music. It's a good, like I said, like a good focal point to have kind of while you're coming up with the ideas, and just on a personal level, as in terms of figuring out what am I good at, what is my tool set, what kind of things do I have to put myself through to get to the best material I can come out with. And that having strong visual ideas has turned out to be kind of a big deal,
something to look forward to. Lots in the works.
I think I'm always gonna have something going on musically, even to the point that I'm not gonna stop playing guitar.
Yeah, with the skill set and education and tools to record at your own,
right? And that's
disposal, and with Bandcamp and all the digital streaming services, you can release music forever and like
kind of an interesting thing. Yeah, I mean, on a macro level, that's the idea that I can do that is weird. I mean, nobody knows what music industry means at this point, but on a personal level, on like you just what I can fit into my life, that's kind of awesome.
Yeah,
that I can have a relatively small setup that lets me make at least to me, you know, my ambitions aren't overly limited with actually a fairly small setup.
Right, you're not. You don't need to reach out to like even like a mid-sized label like Triple Crown and hope they sign you, and you have to go on tour for 100 days out of the year.
Yeah. And then I have to commit to that. I don't know.
And I'm
okay with that. At least for now, at least for what I can actually really see going forward, is that, well, at the very least, whatever it is I'm doing, whatever I'm pursuing, I can at least have that outlet for
reasonable ambition.
Well, I
feel like anybody who gets into music at this time, right?
Yeah.
Like you have to have, like, nobody believes they're going to be.
No, not at
giant,
all.
Giant, right? Like, nobody who gets into any sort of rock style of music believes they're going to be huge.
Right.
Like, that's just unrealistic. Yeah. And we all have read the books and seen behind the music and all have the insider information that being a musician on any sort of full-time level really sucks.
Is. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
It's not glamorous.
I'm not. I have no illusions about that.
Yeah.
By any stretch of the imagination. But
there's only one Dave Grohl these days, and nobody else is reaching that level.
And even
anymore.
He's still like. Did you see that video he put out like earlier this week?
The 23-minute instrumental thing. Yeah.
There's only one Dave Grohl at this point, and even he is still recording stuff by himself, so
right to just put up on YouTube and hope people enjoy it.
It's there's not even like the, you know, carrying a band with you in some ways,
right?
But I mean, that's and you know, that's okay, because really that's, it wasn't that like in the whole scheme of things, the period of time where that was on some level viable was pretty short.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of What I think that kind of gets lost in the music industry conversation is that when it was working was the fluke.
Right.
In a way, you know.
right.
It's not the fact that it's kind of scattered out is not the surprising part.
Right.
The fact that it worked at all in the first place was the surprising part. And that's kind of a cool thing for anyone who's like this, is I still have vivid enough ideas of what I'd like to hear.
Mm-hmm.
That I can do something with those. And just the idea of picking up any craft, I mean, I could, people get into carpentry, people to get into whatever art form or thing you can do with your hands, or really just anything you can do that requires some level of finesse and creativity and just honing in. Something that's a life-affirming practice to have.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of how tied to your income it is.
Mm-hmm.
Which I expect none of that, but
yeah,
I still want to let other people hear it.
Yeah,
as much as they'd like to.
Yeah,
which I hope is enough. So
yeah, it's the great and scary thing about art is you put your heart and soul into something and just put it out there and hope somebody else likes it.
Right. And
at best, hope nobody else hates it.
yeah, and I'll still stand behind anything I put out. The instant I put it out, I start thinking of what's wrong with it and what I should have right. done different and whatever. But like, it's still like an image of you. Like every record is almost like an embarrassing picture that you've just kind of owned up to. like in a way.
Oh man. Yeah.
You know?
That's so true. Yeah.
But
yeah, but at least all your music's instrumental and you don't have like lyrics you wrote when you were 16 or 17 for people to reflect on.
I'm not gonna lie.
That they want you to play still.
That's at least a small part of it.
Right.
of the fact that I'm not overly drawn to throwing lyrics on everything.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, even the stuff I am writing, I kind of have a story for it,
mm-hmm.
a loose one, and it's more for me, really,
right,
than anything. I think it has an effect that you start feeling like there's a reason for all this, you know, being mm-hmm. sequenced the way it is. And I like that. It, you know, kind of a central thread.
Yeah.
Even if it's just implied.
But, yeah.
You know, I'm still like working out personal things the way anyone who writes lyrics would, just not as expressly.
Yeah.
So. And that's okay with
you
me.
You emote it differently. You emote on your guitar.
Yeah.
Good times, Jen. Well, thanks so much for talking and hanging out this week on the podcast, man.
Absolutely. Thanks for bringing me on.
Thanks for listening to As the Story Grows. Our theme song was written and composed by the legendary Bob Nana. If you like what you hear, subscribe on iTunes and give the show a rating and review. If you'd like to support the show financially, click on the Patreon link at asthestorygrows.com. If you enjoyed this episode, share it on social media with your friends. Much appreciated, and thanks for listening. I never felt so good.